It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone!
Swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over! The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Welcome back to Play Tessie. It's episode 65. If you're listening on drop day, it's April 19th. Episode 65 is the James Paxton episode. That's right, we have a legitimate player for 65. James Paxton update, 2-0. 2.81 ERA, 16 innings in three games. His FIP sucks, so he might start to get rocked a little bit. He's getting walks, but we don't need to worry about James Paxton. This is the official podcast of Starving the Children, also known as the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. Before we get going, hit that subscribe button, whether you're on the Apple app, Odyssey, Spotify. Hit that subscribe button, rate us 5 stars. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the WEEI channel and check out our playlist there. Thumbs up on YouTube. Follow us on the socials at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. Here with Sammy and Pat. Sox dropped 3 out of 4 to the Cleveland Guardians. It was a series that started off fun because Gronk showed up to throw out the first pitch, more like Spike the first pitch. But, the first game was kind of interesting for a little bit because Cutter was flat out dealing, but it became painfully obvious they weren't going to score, as happens quite frequently with this team, all too frequently with this team. And we saw how disgusting that lineup was today, that ironically didn't score 0 runs today. But yeah, the offense is a thing. Sammy, Pat, overall vibes, feels after this series going to Pittsburgh. How you guys feeling?
This sucks.
Is it anger? Is it depression? Is it both?
I think
okay. It's both. Here's how we're gonna do this. Zero is depression. 100 is anger. So you're already pissed off or depressed or something. There's no good. Where are you on the 0 to 100?
Smack dab in the middle on both, 50.
Sammy?
Yeah, it's a tough question to answer. I would have to say the same thing. I'm in the middle because I feel depression because there's a lot of good talent on this roster. There's just not enough of it. So that's the depression. And then the anger, and I don't want to keep talking about this. We talked about it all offseason, but the anger comes from completely neglecting this roster. And I think today, Thursday, April 18th, as we record, might be the best example of that, but we'll get into that later in the show.
Yeah. For me, I feel like I like lean slightly more to the depression side just because of where we are in the season. Like, we had all off season to be angry, and now the way I see it is like, oh my God. Like, what I tweeted was that this season, not the season, because they are literally 500. They're 10-10, which is crazy because it feels like they're like the worst 10-10 team ever. But they are 500, but with the way they're playing, it almost feels like 2020, except instead of 40 games left, they have 140 games left. And that could be a little bit daunting, especially when you have to talk about them as much as we do and are going to for the remainder of the season. But
I don't know about 2020. 2020 was the worst Red Sox team you'll ever see in your life. There was nothing to be excited about that year other than Alex Verdugo. This year, I'm frustrated because
I'm just saying in terms of the way they're playing. right now.
I wouldn't go that far. 2020, I feel like we've almost forgotten how bad that was. This sucks. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to sound like I'm defending what's going on right now, but this group has potential. And it's just frustrating to see all the holes we discussed all offseason wrong. Like, fantastic. We were all right. Don't you feel great about that?
Yeah, like
just sucks to see every single day. It's either the defense or they can't hit lefties or there's just not enough depth at a certain spot. The one thing we were happily wrong about is the rotation, which has been unbelievable. Actually, the whole pitching staff has been unbelievable. But when you're making 1,000 errors, leading the league in errors by a good margin, by the way, it doesn't matter. It's just frustrating, man. It's such a waste right now.
It's like the pitching feels like you look at the ERA and it's so good. I don't have the number in front of me right now, but it's certainly in the ones. It didn't go up today because Bernardino started, went 2 innings, didn't let in a run. But they're not letting in runs, but they're not going like Tanner Houck in the third game was he's the only Red Sox starting pitcher this year to touch the seventh inning, not finish the seventh inning, to touch the seventh inning. And that's because of a mixture of a few things. It's the defense, like you said, Sammy. It's walks, which after the first time through the rotation, they have been walking people. And then it's efficiency. Like we've seen a lot of at-bats drawn out. Like these guys are putting guys on base and getting out of jams, which is great, but it's not necessarily the most sustainable way to keep up a pitching staff. Pat, I'm going to give you fair warning now because I didn't give you warning before the show, but you are going to have to give us a massive, it's like going to be a quick but massive Pat's prognosis because we have a few injuries that happen to key players, but none of it is seemingly significant, but we got to get the Pat's prognosis. But let's start first with the Rafael Devers and Tyler O'Neill collision in the first game. Like by that point in the game, you were already not feeling good about the game, and then those two guys collide, and I was sitting pretty close to where that happened, and it was just interesting because Tyler O'Neill like was up on his hands and knees. You couldn't see from where I was that he was bleeding from his face, but he's like on his hands and knees, seemingly like he's like there, and Devers is flat on the ground like dead. And it like kind of ended up being the opposite. But what was the thought process from you guys? Like you guys were watching on TV, I presume. So what was the TV experience for that one like?
Well, I was kind of hoping it was just a cut. Excuse me. Cuts are superficial. They hurt and everything. They look bad, but a cut's a cut, whatever. Luckily, it seems like whatever concussion Tyler O'Neill has, it seems fairly mild because he's only on the 7-day IL. If it were severe, it would be much longer. I've seen a lot of these concussions, so 7-day IL could be a lot worse. But my first thought was, of course. I was just thinking, of course this happens. You have a guy who is awful defensively at third base, probably shouldn't be there, been saying that for a long time now. He's in left field for whatever reason, trying to catch a pop-up that he's not close to. O'Neill is who really scared me because he has that injury history. I didn't want anything to pop back up. I feel like Devers is like, he's like a crash dummy.
He's just Gumby.
Okay. For some reason, I wasn't worried about Devers. I'm like, okay, he's fine. But O'Neill, the hottest hitter on the team, to lose him for any stretch of time sucks. But, you know, I'm just glad there's nothing serious. Concussions are bad, of course. You don't want to see anyone get that, but could have been a lot worse. I hope O'Neill's back. Was it 7-day IL? So be retroactive.
He could be back Tuesday if he's back on the minimum, which he said today he wants to be. So look for him Tuesday, which would be only missing the Pirates series, back for Cleveland.
Yeah, well, you're also taking the word of somebody who's concussed. So we'll see when he's back. But
and it's the Red Sox. They do this.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll see. I'm just glad there wasn't anything super serious.
Yeah. Pat, and I said we're going to do a big pass, but we'll divide it into two because we got to.
That's fine.
Give me Tyler O'Neill. You saw the gash on his eye or on his eyelid or whatever. Mild concussion. Do you believe he's going to be back Tuesday?
So two things. One, seeing it, not knowing where like contact was made, I legitimately was afraid that Tyler O'Neill broke his jaw. That would have been fucking terrible. He did not. He has a cut above his eye. I think it was, if you guys know this, I believe it was 7 or 8 stitches.
Eight.
Eight. Why stitches, do I know right? that? So, I mean, you're talking about maybe an inch, inch and a half. I mean, the cut doesn't matter. Concussion wise though, I think I read that he initially was coming up negative for concussion.
Yeah. I guess misdiagnosed or were wrong, or I don't know. Well, they said he passed the protocol.
So it was smart for them to hold him out. It was smart to redo concussion tests every day. And that he came up positive for a concussion, what, like 3 days later, right? Because that would have been Monday.
Monday he took the hit and he came up positive or whatever today, which is
so three days. Yeah. So, I mean, at that point, that's a very mild concussion. Unless they're playing it incredibly safe, which, I mean, it's Tyler O'Neill, and with his history, I don't necessarily blame them. I think Tuesday is super realistic. And then on Raffy's end.
Yeah, because Raffy had the shoulder thing, then he got knocked in the head in that collision, and now it's the knee that just kind of randomly started barking.
Yeah.
Bone bruise somehow. How does a bone bruise happen when you're fielding a ground ball?
Yeah. I don't know. Alex saying that he was more scared than anything is reassuring, because it wasn't like he said, like, I heard something pop. Like, it's like if it were ACL, and like if it were a legit ligamentous injury, he would have not like stayed in the game, finished running. He would have been on the ground, would have heard a pop, would definitely not have DH'd yesterday. So that's all encouraging. There could be a minor like meniscus tear. But where he played the next day and he didn't immediately get an MRI, I don't know if I'm so concerned about that. If I were guessing anything, I would assume it's going to come back pretty clean. Maybe a light.
They said it. They said
MCL bone sprain, a light MCL sprain, because he DH'd the next day.
Pat, they said after the game that it was a bone bruise.
Yeah. So it was precautionary. Raffy, I mean, maybe he sits a game.
Yeah, I mean, but I would think you just got to take it slow with him. He kind of relented today, and it's usually he's pushing to get back in the lineup and the team is telling him, you got to hold yourself because you're going to hurt yourself. But even he seems to understand that you got to take this slow. So I hope if it needs to be a few games, it's a few games. Hopefully you could take advantage of the day off. He misses the series in Pittsburgh and back for Cleveland. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not super concerned. And maybe a game or two down. That being said, if his shoulder's still bugging him and now the knee's coming up, maybe an IL stint just to give both some time. But if he's able to play through the shoulder,
an IL stint. Why? Who gives a shit? What are you gonna do?
Like, if he's able to play through the shoulder and the knee is nothing, they might keep him. But at this point, why? If he's just going to keep racking up injuries, just give him 7 days. Just give him a week off.
Who gives a shit? What are they going to do? Like, are they going to go on some incredible run and become a great team all of a sudden? Don't put your best player.
Bobby deserves at bats.
Never mind. Don't put him on the IL. Keep him. Let him play with
one knee. Raffy on one leg. Fine. Yeah, you convinced me, Pat.
I know you're a $330 million man, but we cannot watch any more Bobby Dalbec. So, you're playing every day, bud.
So let's get to the third part of this. And there's something game one related that we'll get back to, but I want to stay on the injury subject because Garrett Whitlock was pitching game two. He was pitching pretty well. And after, I believe, 4 innings, it was around 54 pitches. He exits the game. And I'm trying to remember what the injury was.
Did oblique I write it down?
Oblique. Yes. And he had said in the media that he expected to make his next start and that was just precautionary. But then a day or two later, now he's on the IL.
He always says this shit. Have you noticed that? Whitlock's always like, I'm fine. Don't worry about it. Like, dude, just fuck. Like, okay. I can't listen. Like, I like him. I like Whitlock a lot. But anytime he gives any evaluation for an injury or anything, I can't listen to it. He'll always give you the best case scenario, which is better than the worst case scenario, I guess. But yeah, you're not okay, Garrett.
Jesus. Yeah, he could be out there telling you he's going to be out for the year, Sammy.
He could have his arm cut off and he'll be like, I expect to make my next start.
It was like John Farrell breaking down pitching. He's like, through a conviction.
Great Christmas.
No, that was John Farrell breaking down Wade Miley's starts. I
Yeah. Always Wade Miley.
Okay, Pat, but what do you think on Witt? They seem to think it's going to be a quick IL stint. When you see an injury like this, do you agree?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I'll give you a quick little anatomy lesson. So your oblique runs from the bottom of your ribs to your hip. It's the muscle that, or one of the muscles that does this. It turns your trunk. It rotates your trunk.
Oh, this sounds painful.
But you got to think, too, with a throwing motion, you're winding up this way, coming through this way. You're rotating a shit ton. So pitchers pulling an oblique, tweaking an oblique, it's not super abnormal. There's probably 10, 15 guys a year who go down with an oblique. That being said, an oblique strain, you just rest it. It's good. It'll be a short IL stint. He'll be back. It's not at all concerned about it. But yeah, but some people are like, oh God, like injuries racking up. Like, no, it's, if he absolutely had to play through it, he could play through it. We are less than a month into the season. It's a long season. He's pitching well. Careful. Don't do it. Be safe. He'll be back probably at the end of the IL stint. No problem.
Yeah, hopefully, and it'll certainly be the case with O'Neill. He won't need a rehab stint, but I hope Whitlock also does not.
Whit won't either.
Yeah.
They might give O'Neill a day in AAA or something. I don't know if you guys have ever been concussed. It's a weird-ass feeling. It feels like you're just completely out of it. I've been concussed a few times, and it takes a while to feel like you're normal again. So maybe they give him a game or something in Worcester just to see pitches, but I bet
they won't, just because of, if anything, where they are. Because they'll be in Pittsburgh going to Cleveland, and assuming he's going with the team, they wouldn't send him back and then forth and whatever. But let's get into some shit with these games. Game two, because game one, it was like Cutter was great, and then the bullpen and the defense let it up, and the team didn't hit. Great. Game two was interesting as shit. Because Whitlock pitched pretty well, except for one inning. It was like a two-out walk, and then he let up a couple of hits. It was two runs off of a two-out walk. We know how costly two-out walks can be. But then the interesting thing happened with Casas. And the broadcast gave this one a lot of play. Like, a lot of guys have been making a lot of mistakes this year. The broadcast really honed in on Tristan Casas' base running mistake, where he doubles, and then with no outs and a full count, he inexplicably tried to steal third, and the pitcher didn't even start his motion yet, so he just stepped off the mound, threw it to the third baseman, who wasn't exactly close to the base, but it's Casas running. He's very slow. They easily applied the tag. That run would have scored over the course of the rest of the inning. This is a game that went to extra innings, so obviously a run like that is really important. Just add this to the list of all of the blunders. The stat that people are talking about right now is that the Red Sox are not only leading the league in errors, but they're leading the league in getting caught stealing. And just add it to it.
Yeah, I don't hate being aggressive, but that was certainly not the situation to do it, not the personnel to do it either. If you're up by a run or two in a not super important game, and you want to try to catch the other team sleeping, okay. But that just was a weird time to go for that. And Costas admitted to it, too. He said it was a brain-dead move. That was his quote, not mine. So, dumb move. Not much more to say about it. I do like the team being aggressive overall. Not that play itself, but overall being aggressive when you're missing guys offensively. I don't hate that.
Yeah, no, I like aggressiveness. I think... when talking about this team, and it'll be in reference to a stat that we'll talk about later in the show, but it's like, do the Red Sox have to do everything right to win? Kind of, because when you have as little firepower as you do offensively, and obviously the pitching's been way better than we thought, but going into the season, we didn't think it was going to be this good. It's like when you don't have the firepower on either side of the ball, you have to play a really, really good fundamental game and an aggressive game to beat a lot of these teams in Major League Baseball. And you're playing a Guardians team that is really good. They're in first place. I don't know. They must still be in first place because they won 3 out of 4. Yeah. So first place Guardians team, you have to be aggressive. You have to play a clean game in the field. They lose these games directly because they make these errors in the field, and directly because they're getting, in this case with Costas, directly because they get caught stealing there. Like it, yeah. Like it's not just these, it's not just little things. It's not like a little thing in a 10-3 loss.
The errors in, and when I say errors, I mean mistakes. The mistakes are painful mistakes. They're not little things that you look over. They're like, they cost you the game. Like you said, it happened on Thursday, happened on Tuesday. It's just it's the same shit as last year. Yeah. You say this team reminds you of 2020 a lot. To me, it reminds me of 2023. The only thing that's different is the starting pitching's good. So it's even more frustrating because you're wasting it.
Oh my God. Could you imagine? Like if anyone said the pitching was going to be this good, like what would you think our record, the Red Sox record would be if you knew that the pitching staff would have a 2.7 ERA through 20 games? What would the record be?
20 games, like you said, 2.7 ERA and you're 500 on the dot. That sucks ass. That's awful.
The biggest thing too is they don't have the firepower in offense. That's a fact. They do not. They need to take some forms of risks to produce runs. They also need to play very good defense to prevent runs. And the biggest kick in the nutsack is that is the Guardians. That's what they've been doing since they've moved Lindor. Exceptional starting pitching. They play incredible defense. They have contact hitters with smart base running. They play baseball so well so that they can win with what they have. Mm-hmm. The Red Sox do none of that. Not a thing. And they shoved it in their face for four games this week.
I think the offense could be good, but you need Devers healthy. You need him producing. You need Vaughn Grissom to come back because you have one righty right now, and it's O'Neill, and he's out now. So your offense, and wait until we get to game four because that lineup, oh my God. So, yeah, it's just the injuries, the defense. It's so frustrating. I don't think anything bugs me more than the shortstop defense, especially since there's a fix right there on the field in center, and they will not, like, for the life of me, I cannot figure out why Sadon Rafaela is not at shortstop. What more do we have to see from David Hamilton, if that is his real name? Every game there's an error. And by the way, he's made some mistakes that have been considered hits or haven't been recorded as errors. So it's even worse than it seems. He made a good play in game two. Give him credit for that. But he's been awful. I cannot believe they keep running him out there. And it's not fair to him either, because he's got some skills that he's good at, and they're just torching his confidence right now. He can't feel good about himself. It's so frustrating to watch every day over and over. And we got 142 more of these. Sucks.
Sammy, would you kill me if I said that I'm still not there? I'm still not there, at least on a full-time basis. I think there's a time and a place.
So what would you want to keep running Hamilton out there?
I mean, I don't love the idea. I don't like any of the ideas. I think the easy solution is to make a trade and to just overpay for the benefit of your team.
Yeah, that's my first choice too. I would like that the most as well. But right now, if you don't make the trade, you have a guy who, we've gone over this, very good defensive shortstop.
You don't know that. You don't know that. Why do people keep saying that? You don't know that.
He's a shortstop.
You don't know that.
Is he better than David Hamilton? Better than David Hamilton?
At shortstop? Is that the point where our whole conversation about he has to be great, that's out the window now. Hamilton is so bad, it is murdering the team in a million different ways. You just need a guy who's capable at this point. And Sadon is that guy. I have to go back on my take about he has to be great. Yeah, that made sense at the time. Does not make sense anymore. You need someone stable at shortstop. It's crazy.
They're losing games because of one individual's defense.
I agree.
If you plug that one individual's defense with your center fielder who isn't hitting anyways, you're a better baseball team.
But that's my issue right there, is because Sadon Rafaela benefits this team because he plays elite defense. He is not a good hitter. He has been a bad offensive player this year. He would tell you that. That's not a take. He has not been productive at the plate. But he has been awesome in center field, and obviously he's continuing to get better. If you put him at shortstop and he's just good, you've now got a good defender and a huge negative at the plate. He's a negative to your team if you put him at shortstop. He's hurting your team if you put him at shortstop. In center field, he can help you. He gives you elite defense. If you move him, now you're putting Jaren Duran in center. And like, yeah, like Jaren Duran is like a okay center fielder, but you are sacrificing. It's like if you had shit, what's that stupid fucking tape? Flex tape. It's like
how is this gonna come into play?
It's like you have a big vase with two holes, and you have one piece of flex tape, and it's on the center field hole right now. You rip it off and you slap it on the shortstop hole, and it's like, fuck yeah, like shortstop's fixed. Maybe you don't know if he can defend, but we think it's fixed. And now your outfield defense gets worse. And guess what? In game one, when that error that I don't want to say it didn't cost them game one because they didn't score runs, but that error came from the outfield. So if Sidon comes to the infield and you're starting to feel a little bit better in the infield, now all of a sudden you're going to have guys in the outfield. Like we talk about, Devers gets worse when Story is not at shortstop. We talk about how Story helps the rest of the infield. When you take Sidon out of center field, it's going to be the same goddamn effect on your corner outfielders.
This is like you have a broken toe and a broken femur, and you're like, I can't fix the femur because then I won't be able to pay attention. Dude, at this point, it is so abundantly clear that shortstop defense has to take precedent over center field. We saw Duran last year. It's not great, but he's capable in center field. Shortstop is an unmitigated disaster right now. Center field with Duran wouldn't be a disaster. It'd be fine. We wouldn't be thrilled.
I hate to break it to you, Sammy, but if you put Sidon at shortstop, it's still an unmitigated disaster because he's not going to hit, and you don't know if he's going to defend. I am very much willing to say give him a day, maybe two a week there, so you can keep Willier in the lineup, try to get him going, because at this point, they have so many injuries that their only hope of competing is to get Willier going. So I'm there now. I was not there with Willier before. But look, at this point, with all the injuries, you got to play.
You're looking at this team as if it's a team that will eventually get going and start winning games and get into contention.
That's how you're looking at the team.
No. I want him at shortstop because you have an extremely young pitching staff and the shortstop defense is murdering them every single night. I want that fixed.
They're still pitching well. I know, but best ERA pitching in the league.
It could be. It's true. Somehow.
We need to figure out where they are in runs allowed per game. Because I know their runs allowed per game is way higher than their ERA.
How many unearned runs? It's like something crazy.
It's way higher. Coming into this series.
Yeah. 26.
How much?
I think 26. It's 80. It's like 86 earned runs and 26 unearned runs. Or it's 26 of the 86 runs are unearned. It's something stupid. Either way, whichever one of those stats it is, it's ridiculous.
Oh my God. That's insane.
This is my closing thought on Rafaela. The car engine does not work. The shortstop is the car engine. You have a blinker bulb out. You're prioritizing the blinker bulb. The engine's going to get you a lot further.
You're thinking that the thing that would fix the blinker bulb can also just like miraculously finish the engine, when actually it's only shown that it can fix the blinker bulb.
Okay, here's the difference. You don't think that Rafaela is a good shortstop defender. You're not sure.
I don't know. No one knows.
He came up in the minors as an infielder and then
David Hamilton was the minor league defensive player of the year in the fucking organization.
No, you can't compare. That's not like you can't just say like, so did this guy. We're talking about Sidon Rafaela. Dude, he is the best defensive shortstop you have right now. I don't think that's debatable.
I think Marcelo, I fucking know, Gordo. I fucking know. I fucking know he's the best shortstop on this goddamn team. I fucking know.
He did not play. Okay, the stat is 81 runs allowed, 55 of them earned. Holy shit, that's so bad.
Rafaela has not played
a consistent shortstop since he was in the low minors. He's been playing like sporadically 1 or 2 days a week in the upper minors. We have no idea.
He hasn't played
David Hamilton hasn't played a consistent shortstop, and he's starting every day.
I'm not defending David Hamilton. He so sucks.
Who are you putting in short then, Gordo?
Probably David Hamilton.
Oh my God.
Okay.
Okay, it's gonna be Vaughn Grissom, and we'll see if that works.
No. Him, we know for a fact.
The answer is Paul DeJong. I was watching Brady Singer start. I was watching Brady Singer start, and Paul DeJong took him deep, and it was just like, oh yeah, this guy should be on the Red Sox by now. Because then you'd have good defense at shortstop and in center field, which you need.
I agree with you there. I'd prefer to keep Rafaela in center field, and then you acquire a good defensive shortstop. But I think it's pretty clear that they're not going to do that. They don't really seem very urgent. But yeah, all right, cool. So we all agree, Rafaela.
We all agree. Shortstop sucks. Good stuff. You know what else sucked about this game was watching the Red Sox come all the way back miraculously. Like Casas hits a home run around the foul pole. Like, oh my God. And then what was it? Wong hit a 2-run homer, and then Sidon doubled and Duran walked. And then Devers hits this clutch 2-run double, puts the Sox up 6-5. And like Bernie gets him in the 7th. And I want to say Martin got him in the 8th. And then they bring in Jansen for the 9th. They're still up 6-5. And Kenley coughs it up. And that was really disheartening because we've been waiting for the dam to break for a while. He's been walking on the wild side all year. And it was weird because he was usually walks, but this time it was hits. I mean, his stuff just hasn't been that good. And yeah, I mean, the dam collapsed. It was lucky he only let in one because it could have been worse. But in the end, like Weissert let in a run the next inning, they tied it. Then Winkowski let in 3, and that was that. But I feel like the focus here should be on Kenley Jansen because this is a game they should have won. And the future Hall of Fame closer that they have, who is still not where he needs to be on a consistent basis in terms of velocity, and certainly not where he needs to be in terms of his command, he's out there trying to figure it out on the fly. And it's frustrating because like the one place you can't really figure it out on the fly is the closer role.
Yeah, and it's tough because a lot of people are saying put Justin Slayton in that role, but he's been so good in that multi-inning role. So I think you have to keep running Kenley out there as the closer and just hope that it clicks. Like you said, Gordo, guy's going to be in the Hall of Fame. I think he has the 5th or 4th most saves now. I know he was teetering on that record, whatever he's at. He has top 5 most saves. So you have to hope he clicks, and then you flip him to the Phillies at the trade deadline.
Please.
Get whatever you can for him, and then you address whoever the new closer is going to be, whether it's Liam Hendricks, if he's back by then, or someone like Slayton, Winkowski, whoever. So
The thing about Slayton is that they're treating him quite literally exactly how they treated Whitlock when he was here as a rookie coming off the Rule 5, which is the multi-inning thing, but it's also like they are really, really careful with his usage. Like there have been multiple times, like Winkowski came into this game in game 2 and let in the 3 runs, and he had let in runs the night before. And Winkowski does not often go back-to-backs this year because he's been a multi-inning guy. This seemed like it was like a perfect spot for Slayton, who didn't pitch the night before, but they've been trying to give Slayton multiple days in between outings as often as they can. And I'm not complaining about it because this is a kid. Like people forget, like this is a kid. He is in his first, 5, 7, 8, whatever outings as a major leaguer. Like you gotta tread a little bit lightly there. Like I feel like the solution here needs to be, we got to get Kenley right because this is your future Hall of Fame closer. It's even if he's not right, it's not easy to just rip that closer job from him. You can't just be like, hey, we're going to throw this rookie in here and take your job. Like
yeah, you really don't have a choice. There really isn't a choice. You got to hope that he gets right and then you flip him. That's it. I think it's pretty simple.
Pat, you on board with that? Get him right and flip him.
Yeah. I mean, I think Slayton down the line probably lines up as your closer of the future. Or at least from what we've seen so far. But in turn, you do your own team more harm than good if you just move on from Kenley now. Because Kenley's most valuable commodity most valuable trade right now is as a trade piece. So you keep running him out there until he is back to form or until you can move him. Because, I mean, obviously he's not a part of the plan moving forward. Slayton is. But at the same time, you do have to realize that Kenley is a piece of the deadline. You have to get him right. You have to show that he has value, and then you move on this summer.
So I was about to throw a take out there, but I made sure to research it a little bit before I threw the take out there, and I'm glad I didn't. I was about to throw out there, they're going to end up making Slayton. You said Slayton's going to be the closer of the future. I was going to be like, no, they're going to make him a starter. but he hasn't even been starting in the minor leagues. So that's probably not going to happen. I don't even hate when they try to make the relievers starters. Like, it's always, in my opinion, worth the shot to see. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. You just throw them back. But it doesn't look like they're going to do that with Slayton.
Speaking of relievers who they turn starters.
Exactly.
That transition.
Yep. Bang. Game three. It was fun. It was fun. Tanner Houck pitched. And he was the only one who pitched. He threw 9 innings on 94 pitches. Didn't let in a run. Didn't let anyone get past first base.
No walks.
No walks. It was 3 hits. And I want to say, did 2 of them turn into double plays? Or was it might have just been 1. I think it was 1 turned into a double play.
I can't recall, but dude.
It was the first one turned into a double play. But yeah, he was... Yeah. I was there at this game in person, and I am struggling to think of a game that I was in attendance for that was better pitched than that. It was probably the most dominant pitching performance I've ever seen in person. I have not seen any no-hitters or perfect games. So,
you know what that felt like? It felt like, Gordo, when the first time we got credentialed and walked on the field, and it kind of felt like, are we even supposed to be here? This doesn't feel legal. Watching Tanner Houck pitch that well felt the same way. As a Red Sox fan, I'm like, are we allowed to get performances like this from the pitching staff? This feels wrong. Like, I kept checking the box score and being like, is he really only at 62 pitches or what? 63 pitches through 6? How is this happening? But man, that was awesome. And I don't have the exact number, but it was low 90% of his sliders were strikes. Anytime he threw it, strike. And like paint too. Just absolutely nasty. I feel like his delivery this year looks a bit different. He looks a little bit more erect, upright when he's throwing.
You did maybe not more say that. Magic,
but man, that was a pleasure to watch.
He looks more erect.
He does, man. I'm not even kidding. He looks like he's standing up straight. No, did he?
Yeah, game lasted an hour 49 minutes. The best memory I have from this one was I was filling up my water at a water fountain after the Sox hit, and I was like, oh shit, I'm gonna miss the first batter, or I'm like, they're gonna miss the first pitch or something, the first batter. The guy goes, now batting, like whoever the hell is batting. And then like 30 seconds goes by, woo! I was like, did he really strike him out at like 15 seconds or whatever? I mean, that was basically the way it was the whole night. It was insanely impressive. Like, had to be, because the Sox scored 2 runs, and it was on a balked-in run and a Wong homer. Funny thing on the balked-in homer, I thought it was very funny hearing like the it's like they balked in a run, and it's like,
guys jogging 25% speed.
What's his name? Lively.
Yeah, he was pissed.
Ben Lively? Yeah, dude, he was heated after he got out of that inning. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Sounded like he went like, fuck you, really loudly. I like him. Good for him.
Yeah, good for Ben Lively for freaking out on the mound. But yeah, even better for Tanner Houck. Said he had all his pitches working. Awesome game. It was fun to have that for like the 12 hours we could enjoy it for, 8 of which we were sleeping for. Because the next game was pretty quick. I don't know if you guys have anything else you want on game 3 before we go to game 4. Anything, Sammy? Pat? Nothing?
No. Great game. Good defense, Nate, too. Look at that.
Good defense. No errors.
Yeah. Oh, I've got that stat. I was going to rattle it off during this game, but I want to pull out the lineup.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Yeah,
I want to pull out the lineup that they used for this game. And, like, I understand, like, guys are hurt. Like, the guys who were out of the lineup, you had Devers, who has a bone bruise in his knee. He's hurt. Trevor Story's out for the year. Tyler O'Neill has a cut on his eye and a concussion. Masataka Yoshida has not been hitting, and they are trying to get him right. Vaughn Grissom has not played a game because he's been hurt. Those are five projected starters that were not available to be in your lineup. And not just five projected starters, five projected impact starters. And so this is what your lineup was left with today. Leading off, Jaren Duran. Batting second, Tristan Casas. Those are your established players. Mm-hmm. Batting third, Willier Abreu. Cleanup, Emmanuel Valdez. Batting fifth, Connor Wong. Batting sixth, David Hamilton. Batting seventh, Pablo Reyes. Batting eighth, Reese McGuire. And batting ninth, Sadon Rafaela. That's a lineup. Dude, and then not to mention, they had an opener going in this game too.
Right. That's fucking disgraceful. I don't care how many guys are hurt. You're the Boston Red Sox, and you have David Hamilton batting sixth and playing shortstop in April. How the hell, like, let me ask you guys, aside from 2020, because that was a weird COVID punt year, is this the worst Red Sox lineup that you can recall? Because I cannot think of any group of nine that they've put out there that has been more embarrassingly weak than this. It's just like, I can't even fathom this shit. It's insane.
The crazy thing is that it's close to 2020. Like, it's not as bad. 2020 had guys like Jose Peraza, Cesar Puello, Kevin Plawecki. Like, you had some bonafide bums in that lineup.
Holy shit, I forgot he existed. Good recall.
So like today you still had Casas in there. You still had Rafi wasn't even in there. You had Duran and Casas. Abreu, like, it's just so embarrassing. Like, how are we less than a month into the season and you're trotting out guys who should be bench players in AAA on your lineup.
Batting sixth and exactly. Playing shortstop. Like, Hamilton. And you want to hear something else crazy? And people giving me shit on the internet, can you believe that? For, you know, clapping at the Red Sox for this. This lineup, two guys in this lineup make more than $1 million a year. So I don't want to hear, oh, they have
the other. I thought it was just Reese.
No, it's Reese and what is it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Who batted eighth?
Reese.
Rafaela.
Rafaela.
Oh, that's right, because it went into effect this year. Oh, okay. Well, then going into the season, it was only one.
Anyway, point being, I don't want to hear the like, oh, they're injured. They don't ever. You could have had much better depth than this. And by the way,
we said it.
The guy on the bench, aside from Yoshida, who's we'll talk about in a minute, and Devers, who's a little bit banged up, the other guy is Bobby Dalbec. So I do not want to hear for one fucking second that this is, what are they supposed to do? They have a lot of injuries. This depth sucks out loud. It's awful.
Sammy, I want to go back to your question, because you were like, you said, is this the worst lineup we've seen out there outside of 2020? It's just so funny because I think back at like some lineups that we saw last year and some lineups that we saw in 2022. And I just remember thinking, oh, like 6, 7, 8, 9 is like all minor leaguers. Mm-hmm. And now in this one, it's like literally
3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And by the way, they don't play good defense either. So exactly, they're not, they're not hitting. They're not saving you runs. I could not believe my eye. You have Connor Wong. I know he's hot right now, but that's your DH.
That's,
I feel like
DH.
You're taking crazy pills.
But that's we have to get into the Yoshida thing right now, because they opted. There was a Carlos Carrasco on the mound today, right-handed pitcher, Masataka Yoshida. Now for the second day in a row, sitting against a right-handed pitcher. Mm-hmm. Cora said they're just sitting him to get him right. But before game three, when he was asked about why Yoshida was sitting against a righty, his response was, we just preferred the other outfielders.
Right.
So obviously this is not a situation, at least to this point, where Masataka Yoshida is becoming a full-time bench player. But on a scale of 1 to 10, and Sammy, I'll let you give it first. Scale of 1 to 10, where is your panic level on Yoshida?
Right now I'm probably like a 4 or 5. I'm not super panicked. He did the same thing last year. You remember, post 420, Yoshida was a monster it took him a little bit of time to get
until
going.
July.
Yeah. Well, no. 421 is when he, sorry. I get what you're saying. He cooled off in July. But yeah, that was for a variety of reasons. By the way, I want to issue a correction. Red Sox also had Rob Refsnyder on the bench, which makes it slightly better. But anyway, Yoshida, Tuesday, he goes 0-4-6. That is, in case you guys didn't know, that's bad. So I get giving him a day off. But two is kind of strange. You're paying the guy a lot. You had Emmanuel Valdez, who's hitting like 150. He's your cleanup guy. You're DHing your catcher. You have David Hamilton batting six. I feel like this would be the time you want to put Yoshida in the lineup and be like, hey, man, we know you're cold, but we suck right now. So
yeah. Give like a name. And before I will kick to you, Pat, to give your panic meter on Yoshida, but just a note on Refsnyder. When he pinch hit today and came up to the plate, my mind like clicked. I was like, oh, what a relief. It was like a back of my head type thought where I was like, oh my God, face that we know, like a veteran. And I was like, wait a minute, buddy. This is Rob Refsnyder, who is being rushed from being rushed. He was already being rushed, and then they rushed the rush.
But didn't he like not know that he was?
He was in the minor. He was in the AAA lineup today.
There was also a report that they're like, maybe he makes the Pittsburgh series, and then he fucking played today.
Do you guys know that Rob Refsnyder has struck out every single at bat in 2024? Every single one.
Wow, that's better than David Hamilton. Maybe he should be a shortstop.
It's a joke.
He was a second baseman with the Yankees for a hot sec. Maybe he can play shortstop. Maybe.
Well, he's playing first now. He was playing first in AAA.
Why do we care about that? Like, why is he?
Because it gets Bobby fucking Dahlbeck off the roster.
Yeah, you're right. It gets Bob. Okay, fine. You're right. Pat, no, panic no, meter.
No, I don't think that. What does that have to do with Bob? You could put Pablo at friggin' first. They already got.
I don't want Pablo at first.
I think Bob's on the roster because he can play third. So if there's multiple,
Pablo can play third.
Maybe a little bit, not really.
Pablo.
No, but I'm saying if there's multiple injuries and you need Pablo at like short or second because David Hamilton fucking sucks, then you could put Dahlbeck at third. I don't know. He should be on the roster. We've talked about
this. Side question again, because what's better? A guy who can play, who plays a bad defensive third base but gives you a 15% chance of getting a hit, or a guy who plays a good defensive third base and gives you a 5% chance of getting a hit?
That's impossible. It depends on your roster. I don't know.
Is Pablo that much better than Bob?
15%. These guys are hitting 50 and 150.
I'm giving Bob 50 points. I'm being nice. And Pablo, I'm pretty sure, is like hitting 150. Let me see. Pablo's hitting 179. Okay, so he's an 18% chance.
No, you can't. Anyone but Bob right now.
I agree. I
want Bob to do well. I want Bob to go to the games and hit 40 home runs. It's just not happening here.
All right. Finally, the moment we've all been waiting for. Pat, what is your panic level on Yoshida?
I'm going like a 6. I think he will get going. We saw, like Sammy pointed out, we saw it last year. Slow to start, gets a real, really good head of steam, rolls for a bit. Gets cold again, but that might have been, you know, wear and tear on the legs. He played a lot of baseball last year, so on and so forth. The reason I'm higher than Sammy is because he's never been just a DH. I do think that there's a legit kind of, whether it be mental or physical, being in the game defensively and being involved in the game every pitch defensively and then getting at bats. I don't know how he responds to downtime. Like, is that too much downtime for Masataka Yoshida? Is he getting uninvolved in the game? We don't know. He's never DH'd. So I think for him, oddly enough, because people are like, oh my God, if he just focuses on hitting, like, he'd be so much better. Same thing with Rafi. At the same time, though, that's a shit ton of downtime for a major leaguer, especially if you're a guy who's played left field every game, every inning, so on and so forth. So he's not only adjusting to another season in the majors, he's adjusting to not being physically active the entire baseball game. So I think he does get clicking, he does get rolling, he finds some form of groove. But right now he does get a little bit of leeway.
Dude, okay. two things in response to that. One, you'll never be higher than me. Two, if Yoshida's issue last year was too much time on the field and this year it's not enough time, get the fuck out of here. Oh my God, that excuse ever becomes a thing, and I'm not saying it's a thing, I know it's just a theory, I might explode. I'm going to combust. I'll just catch on fire and you'll never hear from me again.
We're making excuses for him when it's entirely possible. And I said this in the offseason, and I've never believed it more than I do now. But like, pitchers adjusted to him. They saw that if you throw the ball inside, he's going to roll right over it to second base and you've got an easy ground out. And he never adjusted back last year, and he hasn't adjusted back this year. All offseason, I heard it was because he wore down, and now it's that he's a slow starter. It's like, maybe the guy just like isn't as good as we thought he was. He has not hit in like 100 plus. No, not. It's like 120 something at bats that he has not been a good major league hitter for. And this is a guy who has to be a good major league hitter, not just because it's for multiple reasons. You're paying him $18 million. He's your DH. And it's the only thing he's ever going to do well. He's never going to be a good base runner. He's never going to be a good defender. You signed him to be a good hitter. He was a good hitter, but we have not seen him be a good hitter since like early summer last year, midsummer last year. Yeah. We need to see it again. Obviously, like they're going to have to throw him out there. He's their best shot. Like it's not like throwing out. It's like you're going to call up. They don't even have minor league outfielders to call up. So it's like, you're gonna play him. But I'm just more and more every day, I'm becoming more and more sure that the player we saw in May and June last year was a player the league had not seen yet. And what you're seeing now is the player that the league knows how to get out. And he has not adjusted back.
You could be right. And Gordo, you mentioned this. If he's not hitting at a high level, it has to be a lot. Then he is just an albatross. Because he doesn't do anything else. Like you said, he's got a hit tool. He doesn't even have power, really. He's not a big home run guy. Maybe like 10, 20 at the most, at the absolute most of the 20. I think his most in Japan was 23. So I doubt he gets there in the U.S. So I know I picked him as my guy who I think is going to do well this year. But my confidence is quickly dwindling. But we're not there yet. He has to get after 420, just like last year. He does a little dabbling in the devil's lettuce and then he hits like crazy. So let him burn up a little bit.
I hope it happens. He was my biggest player concern going into the year. And
you might be right, man.
I hope I'm not right, but I'm scared. I'm scared that I'm right. Rest of this game, Jarren Duran had an awesome 2-run triple into the triangle. I love watching him run. That was a blast. But they never were able to get the tying run across the plate in the next couple innings. Emmanuel Clase like had his way with them. And yeah, that was that. And this was yet another game where had you not had that Pablo Reyes error or that David Hamilton error, just one of them, you probably win the game. You play a clean defensive game, you win. You don't play a clean defensive game, you lose. And we talk about the lineup. We can say as much as we want, but here's the stat. When the Red Sox do not make an error in a game this year, they are 8-1. In the games that they do make errors, they are 2-9. If they make an error, they're 2-9. They're going to lose. If they don't make an error, if they play a clean game, they're 8-1. And it goes to what we said going into the year is that the Red Sox had to be a good fundamental team. And they knew this. That's why they put so much priority in spring training on changing the way they worked on their defense, prepared for their defense. They knew that they had to play good fundamental defense and be aggressive to beat teams. And they're not playing good defense right now. Cora seems to think that they can get there and play good defense in the future, but it's not happening right now. If they can string together clean games, clean error-free games, especially with the way they're pitching, they can win games. But until they do that, it's going to be more of what we've seen.
Where are most of those errors coming from? What position?
Shortstop.
Ah, okay. Just checking.
No, I'm not. I have not once said that I like where we're at with shortstop.
I know. I'm just giving you shit. All right. Can we be done with this freaking series?
please.
Viva David Hamilton. Also, Joe Jakes came in the game, was not very good. He has been optioned. Cam Boozer is going to get the call. Awesome story, Cam Boozer.
Nice.
Yeah, no MVP. Sox lose the series. Shall we move to the series preview for Pittsburgh?
Yeah.
All right.
Weird matchup.
Yeah, Sox going to Pittsburgh for the only time this year. This is the only time you'll see the Pirates. They are 11-8. Once again, they got off to a hot start this year, but they have now lost 6 of 8. They just finished off getting swept by the New York Mets, who on the opposite end of the spectrum, they started out 0-5. They've been playing really well. First game, Brian Baio versus Quinn Priester, who is going to be making his season debut. Brian Baio has a 3.92 ERA. He's coming off a 5 1/3 inning, 2 earned run, 8 strikeout outing in which he threw 107 pitches, really had to push himself and like was fairly successful in it. Pitched a good game. Quinn Priester, as I said, making his season debut last year, he pitched in 10 games, 8 of which were starts, and he had a 7.74 ERA. This year in the minors, he has a 3.95 and 3 AAA starts. He's averaging 4.5 innings per start. Game two, Cutter Crawford. 0.42 ERA for Cutter. He's coming off 5 2/3 scoreless, dominant outings against Cleveland. 6 strikeouts. They'd got nothing going against him. They scored 6 runs in the game. It was all after he left. Versus Mitch Keller. He has a 4.5 ERA. Last start was 7 innings, 2 earned runs, 4 Ks against the Phillies. So coming off a good one, but had not before then been the best start that Mitch Keller's ever had. Game three, the Red Sox, as of right now, is TBD. I think it's going to be TBD for a little while. We saw Cooper Criswell only throw a couple innings today. I think that's because they want him to also go a couple innings there. So my guess is that they're going to go Cooper Criswell for a couple, Chase Anderson for a few, and piece it together from there. They said that Uwasawa could come up, but we'll see about that. Pirates, it's old friend, old amigo, Martin Perez, who this season has a 2.55 ERA, and he's coming off 5 2/3, 3 earned runs, and 1 strikeout against the Mets. Pirates do not have hitters to watch. They don't. Like, Brian Reynolds is whatever.
Cruz.
O'Neill Cruz stinks.
No, come on. He's fun. He's a fun guy.
He's fun. He's 6'7". It is fun watching him strike out every at-bat. I agree.
Yeah, he is fun to watch with your eyes. Not to be aware or cautious of. He is visibly fun.
I agree.
He looks like a...
He's a freak.
He looks like a Predator from Alien. Predator. He's like huge with the dreads, and he has long arms.
He is the Taco Fall of baseball. Visibly,
no.
You're like, this guy's an anomaly. He is not dangerous. He will not hurt you.
Show him some respect.
All right, boys. It's time. Series predictions. To recap last series, none of us got it. Sammy had them winning 3 out of 4. Pat and I each had them splitting.
Whoa, I had 2.
You had 2?
I had win-loss.
Oh, so we all had splits?
Yeah.
Well, either way, all wrong. They won 1. No one gets a point. I got the score update. I should have had it up before. Someone just give your series prediction. I'll interject when I get the score update.
I got it.
Pat, what do you got? Never mind. I've got the score update. I'm just
this gonna is podcasting 101, baby.
All right. Sammy's got 5 points, Pat has 3 points, and we are almost through. Well, actually, we're not. We're over halfway through April, and I still do not have a point for the series prediction scoreboard. Sammy 5, Pat 3, Gordo 0. Pat, what do you got?
Okay. I got the Red Sox winning 1 of 3. And I think they win the Mitch Keller start. I don't anticipate Raffy being in the lineup the first game. That is my reason for picking the loss in game one. I think he comes back game two. Not a big fan of Keller. He's okay. I think they beat Keller. And then, as we have already mentioned, the lineup right now is entirely lefties. So I think they actually do struggle against Martin Perez and take the loss in that one. So I'm going loss, win, loss.
All right. Loss, win, loss. Sammy, what do you got?
I think the Red Sox actually win 2 out of 3. I think they win the first 2 games and drop the last game. I think we're all in our little bubble talking about how bad it's been to be a Red Sox fan and all these issues with the team. They got a friggin' like left fielder playing shortstop. They got like, no, everybody's left-handed. Your best players are out. But the Pirates might have it even worse. And lest we forget, they are the Pittsburgh Pirates. So I'm going to say the Red Sox win the first two games, drop the last game. Am I supremely confident in this? No, but these are two teams toiling in the depths of mediocrity. So I'll go 2 out of 3 Red Sox, win, win, loss.
Okay. I am going to join Pat in the 1 out of 3. I actually would have been willing to take 2 out of 3 had the Red Sox, or if I thought the Red Sox would put out more of a full lineup, but like O'Neill's not playing in the series. We know that for a fact. So the only hope you have for this series is that Yoshida gets back in there and is productive and that Raffy maybe gets in there for a game or two. I think, ironically, they win the first one, which is the one that they're guaranteed to not have a good lineup, but they're facing a schmuck. And I think Bayo can kind of have his way with the Pirates offense. Remember, the Pirates have lost 6 out of 8. So I think Bayo pitches well and gets the win in the first one. I'm also not that big on Mitch Keller, but I just think this is going to be a classic, like 1-0 Red Sox loss in game two. Like their Cutter's going to pitch great as he has, even though Pittsburgh was the one team that kind of got to him last year. But like, I don't think that means anything. I think he'll pitch great as he has, and Keller will dabble in trouble and they won't take advantage. And it'll be like 1-0 or 2-1 or something. Martin Perez game. I'm guaranteeing you they lose that game. They're not winning that game. There's no chance. Even if they had a full lineup, Martin Perez, it's like the gods, like the revenge, like it's not going to happen. Martin Perez, you got this one, buddy. So yeah, 1 out of 3. Pat, what's it time for?
It is time for another installment of Crystal Bomb.
Bomb it.
Just to recap, this past Guardian series, Sammy took Willier Abreu. I took Jarren Duran. And I'll let Gordo dance on our graves. Gordo, who did you take?
Tristan Casas with a little rap piece around the pole.
Gordo, do we have a score update on Crystal Bomb? How much are you beating us?
Yeah, it's a blowout right now. I have 4 points. Pat has 1 point. Sammy has 0 points.
It's a rough out here in the streets.
All right. I'm getting on the board this week. Can I go? Can I pick?
Yeah. Go for it.
Give me Casas. He's been hitting the ball fairly well. There's no other good choices. Two righties. I gotta use my Casas pick right here. Please, Tristan. Even though you called me Steve, please.
Oh, I haven't used that enough. Come on, Hebrew Steve. I gotta get on my game.
Gordo, hit it.
I've been dabbling between two. And I'm gonna go with Jarren Duran. And I was debating between him and Willier for this one, but I just don't think Willier's going to play the third game. So I'm just playing a numbers game in my mind. And Jaron, he's hit a couple of balls pretty hard. He's been one of the best hitters on the team this year. Obviously, he's not hitting for very much power. It's going to change. On the road, I feel like Jarren Duran, I'll have to look this up, but like in my head, it feels like he hits more home runs on the road. And it would make sense because of the way Fenway Park is built, but I'd have to check on that. I feel like Jarren Duran is going to go deep in this series.
This is going to sound like a joke. I swear to God, I'm serious. I'm taking Rob Refsnyder. I'm going Rob Refsnyder in the third game off Martin Perez. This guy fucking mashes lefties. I'm going Martin Perez.
No way.
I'm going
Martin
Perez.
Perez. Rob Snyder. No, Rob. You said it, man. You're taking Martin.
I just jinxed it. He's going to strike out 3 times.
All right, so recap it, Pat. What do we got? What do we got on the board here?
I got it. I'm going with kind of friend of the program, winter weekend friend of the program, Rob Refsnyder. Gordo is going with Jarren Duran, and Sammy is praying to the gods that Tristan Casas can hit a home run at PNC.
Let's get Sammy on the board this week. Sammy, what do we got? What's it time for?
All right, everyone's favorite segment. It's time for guys being dudes.
Ja.
All right, so this week we're picking a player who has played for both your Boston Red Sox and the Pittsburgh Pirates. Gordo, who you got?
So I most players who come and play for the Red Sox, I like. When you root for guys every day, you like come to like them, especially when they're good players. If they play well, you like them. I'm going to give you like the rare example of a Red Sox player that played for the Red Sox. He also played for the Pirates, that came to Boston, was really good, and I hated his guts. Jason Bay. I couldn't stand. So I grew up, Manny could do no wrong in my eyes. I adored him. He was everything. And so when they traded him, not just Jason Bay is his replacement playing left field, but he was directly part of that trade. So for me, Jason Bay was just, he was out for me. I could never like him. I was never going to let myself like him. It didn't matter if he hit 30 and drove in 100. I didn't care. Was never, ever, ever going to like him. I always go back, though, to the, I want to say this was a Rob story, that Jason Bay had an extension ready to go. He had an agreement on an extension with the Red Sox. And then, like, he took his physical and the Sox were basically like, you have to get this surgery if you want an extension. And by the way, we're tearing our offer down. It's like, Rob would have to tell it, but like, it was nice, like, we're going to give you like a 2-year deal instead. And Bay was like, fuck off. And then he went, finished off the year and then goes to the Mets.
He fell apart. Good shit, Red Sox. Jesus, that would have been a disaster.
Can't give him too much credit because I think they were like pissed off about something with his leg and he started to suck because he got the concussions. Pray for Tyler O'Neill.
Jesus. Yeah.
Yeah. Jason Bay. That's mine.
It's a good one. I think Bay was really good for the Red Sox. So
he was.
By the way, same exact swing as Kevin Youkilis. Never been able to get that on my brain. They both do the wrist. Different batting stance, but the swing, same thing. Got to watch a video.
I'll take a look. Right.
Pat, who you got there, kid?
All right. Mine's a two-parter trivia question. In the trade deadline 2003, the Red Sox traded a future three-time All-Star to the Pittsburgh Pirates. Who was it?
In 2003? Oh, I know this. It's Freddie Sanchez, isn't it?
It is Freddie Sanchez.
I don't even remember Freddie Sanchez. This predates my baseball memory.
Freddie Sanchez was traded. If you can name one of the three players that Freddie Sanchez was traded for, I will be stunned.
I don't have this one.
Nope.
John Halama.
Rolando Arojo.
I'll give you a hint. It was a reliever who I literally think played maybe 2 years in Boston.
Matt Manti.
It was Brandon Lyon.
Oh,
big lie.
Jeff Stupon.
Oh,
and Anastasio Martinez, whoever the fuck that is.
Okay, can anyone off the top of their head tell me who the Red Sox then traded Brandon Lyon for? He was in a deal for somebody.
Shit, man, I don't know. Josh Rutledge again?
No, bigger name. Do you want, Pat, do you have any idea or you want me to say it?
What team did they trade him to?
The Diamondbacks.
Wait, give it to me again. Give it to me again.
Brandon Lyon, the Red Sox traded Brandon Lyon in a deal to the Diamondbacks. Lyon ended up having a pretty good career with the Diamondbacks.
Isn't he a closer for them?
Yeah.
Wow, big lie. Okay, wasn't Byung-Hyun Kim because that was Shea. I don't know.
The hint is it was not straight up. He was part of a package.
Oh, I don't know.
Wait. What year was he traded? Do you know this?
Yes, he was traded in the offseason between 2003 and 2004.
So was it Pokey Reese?
No.
No. It would have been.
Come on. Package trade. Kurt Schilling.
Oh, that was so stupid.
Wait, who is that? Kurt Schilling?
He's the guy they got for Brandon Lyon.
Oh,
he was the lead singer of Nirvana, right?
Kurt Schilling. That's the guy they got for Brandon Lyon. That's who Kurt Schilling is.
Yeah. Married Courtney Love, right? Lead singer Nirvana?
Yeah.
He's from Alaska. That's pretty sweet.
Wait, so Pat, yours was... Oh, no, it was Freddie Sanchez. Okay. Yeah. I was like, Brandon Lyon?
Right, Brandon Lyon would have been a crazy pull.
All right. I'll do mine really quick. This is a recent guy. Stud outfielder. Can't believe he's not on the team anymore. You guys remember Big Gork? Gorky's Hernandez?
Yeah.
He was one of the players who played a game, at least a game for the Red Sox. He existed, and his name is Gorky's. So he is a legend forever. By the way, completely off topic, I'm so sick of whenever there's a mention of a guy who played briefly for the Red Sox or any team, and people go,
you hate the legend. You hate the legend.
Shut the fuck up. We get it, dude. That joke is so overdone. Anyway.
You hate the legend talk, man.
Yeah, big Gork. Gorky Gork. He did not do much here or in Pittsburgh or in San Francisco. So, or Atlanta. I don't know. He played a lot of teams, didn't do much. But yeah, that's my guy, Gorky's Hernandez. And that is guys being Phillies. I don't know what to tell you.
Hell of a preview right there. Sox Pirates. You will not want to miss it. All right. Shall we do some Nuff Said before we get on out of here?
Let's hit it.
Does anyone want to go first?
I'll go first.
Pat, what do you got?
I've had a real hankering. A real hankering for some grade A, top of the line mac and cheese. Gordo, do you have any recommendations?
Ooh. I have lots of recommendations. Mac and cheese is a food that never fails. There's actually only one place that I've had mac and cheese at that I didn't like. I'm not going to say it because I don't want to like be an asshole about it.
Put it in the chat. Put it in the chat.
I'll tell you after we're done recording. I want to type it because I'm holding my mic. I have one hand. I would say the best mac and cheese that I get in Boston is at Quincy Market. There's a specific in that row of food places. There's a specific mac and cheese place there that is awesome. You got to have it. There's a French fry stand right next door. So you can get both at the same time and have mac and cheese with a side of fries. That, yeah, get that.
All right. All right.
Carb loading.
Duly noted.
Gordo, you want to go?
I'll go. I have a major, major bone to pick. And I was tweeting about this during the game, during the Hauk game. Because, like, it was so great that he was pitching so well and, like, the game was quick and it was so much fun. But, like, inside I wanted to kill myself because they got rid of the refillable popcorn helmets at Fenway Park, which is, like,
boo.
My fiance, like, loves popcorn. And, like, the biggest draw to get her to go to games with me is the popcorn. And what we would do every year is we buy the popcorn helmet. You can get it refilled as many times as you want. There are some stands that won't do it, but most stands, like if the stand has a popcorn maker, you could get it refilled there. They've gotten rid of that. But what we would do, we'd get the helmet. I'd always buy a new helmet on the first game of the year that I went to, and then I would continue to bring the helmet back into the ballpark because, like, in theory, it's just a souvenir. They can't stop you. And they, like, I was very open about bringing it back in. Like, it was always out in the open, and they never stopped it. And so I would just eat free popcorn all year at Fenway Park. And they've gotten rid of that. And for an ownership group that has preached the Fenway experience, that is killing the Fenway experience. Do better.
It's kind of crazy how many people on your post on Twitter didn't know that that was a thing. I've been doing that for years. You just get the plastic helmet, wear it in, refill. I thought that was like a widely known thing. Guess not.
Yeah, not enough people knew that you could refill popcorn at Fenway. I was getting way too many responses to that tweet of like, oh, I didn't know you could refill pop. No, yes, and you were missing out because now you can't do it.
great message, Pat. All right. So mine is just to notify listeners, Gordo and I will be going up to Maine to get some content with the Sea Dogs. So we're going to be churning that out over the next couple of days and just wanted you guys to be aware, be on the lookout. We're hoping to get some big names because they're all in AA right now. But yeah, keep an eye out for that. Excited for the trip. Love Maine. Would maybe move there someday. I know people from Maine hate when us massholes move up there, so I'm sorry. But yeah, be on the lookout. And go Sea Dogs.
Go Sea Dogs.
What sound does Sea Dog make?
Hey, man, we got to ask the players to make sea dog sounds.
Hey, Roman, what noise does a sea dog make?
What if he was like, well, it depends which kind of sea dog. If it's one of the northeastern ones, it makes. But if it's one of the west coast ones, they're more high pitched.
Kyle Teal to cook up just the tastiest lick you've ever heard using seal noises.
Or dude,
sea
that dog would be sick. Like, I want to ask Kyle Teal about DJ.
If you don't tell him that, I will tell him next Friday when I see the sea dogs down here in Connecticut.
We do have
a
gift
all over.
We're coming with a gift from the Play Tessie crew, but I'm going to keep it a secret because it's a big deal.
Oh, yeah. Big deal. Big gift. Big deal.
Especially up north in Maine.
Right, well, on that note, does anyone else have anything before we put a bow on this one?
Nah, I'm so sad. I just want to eat dinner and go to sleep.
I want a good baseball team. Maybe in Portland we'll see the little touches that are going to make the next couple of years of Red Sox baseball better. But
want to see some little touches? Some little touches up in Portland?
No, Diddy.
Little touches for Gordo? Little touches for Gordo. We're going to get little touches for Gordo.
Appreciate you tuning in to episode 65 of Play Tessie. Sox drop 3 out of 4 to the Cleveland Guardians, but hopefully get back on the saddle and take a couple or maybe even all 3 in Pittsburgh. We'll see. We'd all feel much better in the next podcast if they did that. But before you jump off this show, before you do whatever the hell else you're going to do with your day, hit that subscribe button. Whether you listen on Apple, Spotify, Odyssey app, hit the subscribe button and rate us 5 stars. If you're watching on YouTube, subscribe to WEEI and hit that thumbs up. And then comment wherever you're listening and tell us in text form, what noise does a sea dog make? I'll be looking. I'm very curious what you guys come up with. But appreciate you guys tuning in. This has been episode 65 of Play Tessie. For Sammy and Pat, thanks for tuning in. It's Gordo here. Thanks for tuning in. Toodaloo.